engagement with value that Bitcoiners are taking. And again, first it happens in the economic and financial, but then, you know, this thing starts to reorient your life and you care less about like all the frivolous bullshit and things like, you know, relationships and health and freedom and all the and truth become elevated as like the things that most orient you. And then you engage with people on that basis and you develop a, you know, a culture or a community. And you know, your life starts to change around these things that have historically been elevated as like the most valuable transcendent principles or ideas for all the history of humanity. The question is like, why is that happening?
Hey everyone, welcome to episode number 70 of the Wake Up Podcast. I'm going to do something interesting here. I've got John Vallis on with me and we're going to be exploring his incredible article, Money Messiah. But what I'm going to start doing with the podcast is I'm going to, instead of doing big fucking long ass 2-3-4 hour podcasts sometimes, I'm actually going to break them up and I'm going to keep them to around an hour each. That way, in future, I'll be able to do a bit of analysis at the end of them, which I think might be really useful. So that way you guys have like a bit of commentary at the end of each piece. But also they're more bite-sized, so you guys can get through them a little bit easier. So that's a couple updates that we're doing here at Wake Up. Before I get into what this is about, a couple other quick things. Number one, try get over to the Value for Value apps. You've got Fountain, you've got Breeze Wallet, you've got obviously Sphinx, you've got all of these things. We really want to engage you as the listeners, not only just to, you know, streaming sites is one thing, but really the boosts. I want to lean into the boost function and encourage you guys to interact with me, send me comments, tell me who you want me to interview next, particularly with this commentary piece as well. Tell me what you want me to review and what you want me to go through in future series and future episodes, maybe even questions that you want me to ask. So be interactive on there. You know, this value for value thing is going to be such a huge thing. And we as Bitcoiners and as, I guess, sovereign individuals can really pioneer this. So value for value, get on Fountain. If you're listening now on something like fucking Apple Podcasts or Spotify or anything like that, get the hell off there and go and download Fountain, go and download something similar. I'm also going to be doing some more promos with Fountain, giving away sats, probably 20-25,000 sats per clip that you guys take, because you can actually take clips on these apps and post them on Twitter. The one that gets the most likes is going to get a bunch of free sats. So I'm going to start rolling that out over the next couple episodes. So for now, let's lean into the boost and let's start getting into a habit of utilizing value for value. Anyway, without further ado, let me explain to you what this episode is about. We dive into basically, this one was interesting actually, before we even got into the meat of what the article was about, we talked about the process of writing and ordering and formatting information from the chaos of like the subconscious void. And there was a really interesting idea that John put there, which was this kind of ideas and these constructed interesting insights emerge from the void of the subconscious, which was super interesting. We talked about the process of evolution being one of discovering greater fidelity, precision, accuracy. We explored a little bit of the metaphysics of quality, which is Persig's work in what do you call it, Leela, which if you haven't read that book, you should definitely check it out. Breedlove did an awesome series on it with, I think it was Mike Hill. We discussed consciousness, and this is a huge topic, and at some point I really want to dive into this in subsequent episodes, but the person we referenced there was Eric Neumann, and he's got a couple incredible books now. I can't remember the one that we referenced specifically in the podcast now, but you'll hear it obviously as we go through there. And then we also talked a little bit about matter versus what matters, which is obviously one of my personal favorite topics. So this is episode one of the Money Messiah series. I hope you enjoy it, and I'll see you on the next episode of the Wake Up Podcast. All right, Mr. Vallis, welcome again. we were just talking about what this piece started off as, the Money Messiah, and I was actually going to say just before I click record, I was going to tell just remind you, I think I was in Brazil at the time when you first mentioned that you were writing this piece. And that's why I remember, because that was early 2020 or 2021, whatever it was. Yeah, 2021. And I remember you you telling me I'm writing a piece on, you know, through the, actually, no, it wasn't. No, I was in fucking Costa Rica. I remember actually, I had just got to Costa Rica and I had just got to Santa Teresa, to visit Francis. And I remember you telling me, and I was like, yeah, man, I'm writing a piece with Jordan Peterson and stuff as well. And,
Right.
And it was the Chaos Order one. Yeah. So now it makes sense, because this is, I mean, what did it take you a whole year to write in that case, right? Like almost.
First of all, I've loved your several part series of Peterson's work. It's phenomenal. But I mean, like, I guess, you know, well, I don't know what your process is like, but I suspect a lot of people that try to write stuff, you know, it didn't take me a year to write. Like I wasn't writing constantly throughout the year. You go through a burst where you're on it for a few weeks, you leave it alone for a few months, you're on it for a few more weeks. And so that was, you know, it was like that for 2021. And then finally in like, after I got back from El Salvador in November at that conference where I saw you there as well, I was just like, this is stupid. Like either like throw it in the bin or just get it out the door. And so I like tried, I took 2 weeks and really spent a lot of time on it and read it a bajillion times and, you know, tightened it up. And got it out the door. And like I just said to you before we started recording, it's the type of like topics being dealt with there that I could have taken like 10 years to fully flesh out each section. And it could be like a much longer piece, but I wanted to like just get the tip of the iceberg and get the point across on each topic and indicate how they might be tied together and then tie them, make a fairly profound assertion at the end and tie them together. Mm-hmm. And my intention with all this stuff is just, I want to facilitate more conversation or articulation of these themes so that I can understand them better, so that I can take that understanding and integrate it into my life for the benefit of my life and, you know, people around me and humanity and all that stuff. And so, you know, I knew, well, I make some fairly big assertions there. And what I was hoping was that people would read it and they'd come out of the woodworks with their commentary and stuff. And that's happened to a certain extent. And now I feel like the task is just to, you know, to take whatever development has happened since then and expand upon some of the areas that I think are the most interesting. And, you know, we should all be doing that. And if we all do that, then 5 years from now and 10 years from now and 20 years from now, hopefully we'll have a greater grip on these things. And if they really are as meaningful as we think they are, then having a greater grip on them, having greater clarity and being able to conceptualize them in our minds means that we can more integrate them into our lives. And if we're dealing in profound truths and we find better ways of integrating them into our lives, then that's a good thing, you know, maybe the best thing. And so
yes,
that's the motivation behind it all.
I love it. There's a couple threads I want to pull on there, particularly the one about integrating, but let's save that for later in the pod. One of the things I do want to ask you before we dig into elements of this profoundly beautiful piece is it's kind of on the writer's journey again, because I think about this a lot. And Peterson, once again, he talks about writing as a way to order and format your thoughts. Basically, you know, we've all got these ideas, and you know, we think we know stuff until we start writing it down, and then it actually challenges us to like validate. It's like, oh wait a minute, what am I talking about, this and that, and to actually write something coherent. And actually present an argument or present a thought and, you know, to have it make sense and be compelling is actually a process of thinking and formatting and ordering, taking, you know, it's such a meme now, that taking the chaos and turning it into order, right?
It's a mind fuck. It really is.
It really is. Yeah. So I want to ask you a couple of pieces here. Number one is, do you find that when you found kind of like a muse, I was speaking to Goldstein actually last night about Bitcoin Times edition 5. So he's going to do a piece like edition 5 is going to be about Bitcoin through the Austrian lens. So I've got him, Seyfedin, Pierre, blah, blah, doing some writing about Bitcoin through an Austrian lens, which has obviously been beaten to death. So like what we're trying to figure out is a different angle or something meaningful that people can read and explore and understand, obviously from probably what of 3, 4, 5 of the best people in Bitcoin from an Austrian mindset. And one of the things he brought up to me was, he said, you know, writing something is really about like finding a particular muse. And then all of a sudden, you know, you get this kind of burst of inspiration, and most of the writing comes in short bursts. And then, you know, the cleaning and formatting later is that process of actually, you know, ordering it and structuring it, et cetera. But I'm curious to hear, you know, if you could dive in deeper about that process, because I know heaps of people listening to this want to write, and I encourage them to write all the time because it's such an important process. So yeah, maybe talk to me a bit about that.
Yeah. Well, again, like kind of first time writer experience for me. And like, as I was writing this piece, I thought of people like you and Rob and other writers who I respect. And I was just like, I hope they find it as painful as me, because I don't want to like come, I don't want to think that I'm finding it especially painful. And thank fuck, I think I've talked to you and Rob, and you've both said like, no, it's fair. It's like chewing glass at moments, you know, like it's it's horribly, painful, maybe not the right word, but it's just, it's annoying, and it's whatever. It's not pleasant for a lot of the time, but engaging the muse is a good way of looking at it. Like these days, just yesterday, you know, I went for a run, and typically I think it's most of my insights come when I'm not thinking about them, obviously. Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. Like you're out for a run, your mind is focused on, you know, the work that you're doing, and then the insight just kind of dawns on you. Or typically when I'm surrounded by like beauty or awe also. So like after the run, I got in the ocean and I was just looking around and the clouds and the sun and the beach and the trees. I was like, oh, this is so fucking beautiful. And then you just get smacked within like an epiphany of a certain kind. And then it's a matter of like, shit, I need to hold on to this. And you're like running out of the ocean onto the beach, like running home, trying to get in front of your computer in time to write it down. And as you said, like when you finally put, you know, try to type it out or write it out, it's not as pristinely ordered as you remember it being when the epiphany first hit. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's like, that's the challenge of dealing with the distance between this just profound clarity that you access or dawns on you when you have the insight, and then spitting it out in words that make sense. And because also those insights come in what is already like an integrated framework internally, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm, but when they hit the page, you don't have that context. They're just mm-hmm. by themselves. And so they seem like lonely, or they don't seem properly, properly contextualized. And so the process of writing for me has been, when that moment strikes, like, it's because it's painful to sit down and be like, this is my writing time. Because mm-hmm. you might sit there and you might be like, well, there's nothing flowing, so this is just a waste of time. So for me lately, I've just like, if that hits, I just try to write as much as I can. If it's 10 minutes, if it's 2 hours, so be it. And then, you know, I usually don't edit until I'm really starting to put the piece together. Like it's just idea dumps, and I'll like tag it with a certain topic. Like if it's philosophical, if it's economic, if it's around value, whatever. And I'll, you know, that's how I'll tag it. And then I'll go back and look at it. And the initial dump is just to try to get a semblance of the idea out. And I'll have all these notes around the idea, like make sure to cover this, explain this, all that stuff. And then the process of, well, I mean, as Peterson has said before, right? Like the sentence has to fit into the paragraph, which has to fit into the chapter, which has to fit into the book, which has to fit into a broader context of the topic you're trying to explore, which has to fit into, you know, all the way up to God, basically. If you're really, you know, trying to tackle these more meaningful subjects. And so the process of like editing the words you're using to most approximate the meaning that you access when that insight first smacked you and have it all come together is pretty painstaking. And so for me, it's just brain dump on the ideas, leave them till later. And when I start piecing together the form and the format of the piece, you know, usually you block it together first and you don't worry about the specifics of the words and sentences and stuff. And then you get into the nitty gritty of being like, what was that insight really? Like, I've got the reminder here. Okay, I kind of remember what I was thinking. Like, and then you flesh it out. And, you know, sometimes it can take a long time to just flesh out what you thought was a pretty self-evident epiphany or insight when it happened. And so far, that's kind of been the process for me.
No, I love that. It reminds me of, I don't know if you ever listened to Tupac when you were younger, but he's poetry for, you know, what I would like to describe his work as. You know, he always described like God or, you know, some force talking through him. And that's what those epiphanies sometimes feel like. I mean, I remember when I wrote the first Bitcoin Times, like it's a 40,000-50,000 word thing. Like it's a whole fucking mini book. And that came from three bursts. The whole thing came from three bursts at random times. One at 3 o'clock in the fucking morning, I got up and I was just like, the other one when I was driving and I'm just fucking dictating to my ex-girlfriend. I'm like, fucking just start typing this shit. And another one like at some other random time. And then like I had to piece it all together and I ended up, you know, it ended up being really nice. But, you know, I wonder what those, you know, it's like God speaking through there. You. It's a profound thing. I think it's, and I don't think it's appreciated enough. And I also like what you mentioned about, you know, when the insights hit you. And for me, like running is a really big one. Like running seems to have this mind body thing where it all of a sudden, like it bursts you with ideas. That a really good gym session, like I'll be, you know, really pushing hard, training hard, and fucking ideas are just coming to me. Like,
because you're not trying. You're not trying to fish for them. You're just like doing something else. And because you're always kind of thinking about this subject matter, like they just dawn on you, you know? And I used to carry my phone with me when I was back in Canada running all the time, but you know, I run in no shoes and just my swim trunks now. So I don't take it with me. So it's easier to keep notes like when they struck before, but anything physically demanding to take your mind away from that, because you're so focused on the thing that's physically demanding. And then, you know, you're having a rest between sets and it just hits you and, you know, and again, what's going on there? Who the fuck knows? Like, why do things jump out of the void and hit you when you're least searching for them?
Yeah. Or when you're taking a shit as well.
And it's like, it's a form of revelation, is it not? Like you're just, not seeking for it. You don't know where it came from. You didn't do anything to ask for it. It just dawns on you. And, you know, maybe it's the case with revelation that like you describe something as revelation versus just an epiphany versus just an insight, dependent upon how the profundity of what was transmitted, you know, and who knows where it ultimately comes from.
It's an interesting inquiry. I think it's like the analogy that you said there, like sort of jumps at you from the void is really interesting, because I guess, sometimes I'm at a weird point in life, like having spent so many years now, like, you know, my entire 20s, I was fucking bookworm and like, I didn't go out and do any of that shit. And so I've like read such a broad range of stuff these days. I find it hard to really find a good book or a good piece and kind of feel like the idea is just not recycled, like, you know, or just like phrased differently. Like, and your piece actually genuinely, like it was really, really well written, and I'm not just blowing smoke up your ass. Like it was nicely written. And that's why, like, I've got so many fucking notes here that we'll probably need a whole series of podcasts to go through. But I do genuinely find myself like reading a book. I'm like, oh, fuck it. Right. I've heard this shit before. You know, if it's you're just using different words or a different frame or a different context. But I wonder, like right now I'm reading Leela, which, you know, Rob did a really great series on, and, you know, the first couple chapters were a little bit, you know, I was like, what the fuck am I reading? But now that I'm kind of into it, like it's getting into the meat, particularly the metaphysics of quality. And it's, you know, really interesting. And I wonder how, and I don't know if this is a question yet, but I wonder how that kind of seeps into the void, and kind of like blends with all the other ideas, and somehow, you know, your brain is, you know, linking things together and making sense of it, and, you know, finding alignment and principles and truths. And then, yeah, like all of that stuff's happening without your conscious awareness. And then all of a sudden you're taking a shit or you're doing bench press or whatever. And something, like, as you said, pops up out of the void and you're like, holy shit, I'm a genius. but you know, did it come from you? Is it some sort of synthesis? Like, has it come from elsewhere?
Exactly.
It's an interesting inquiry.
Are you seeding the void with all this like peripheral stuff, and then it just like it has to pop something out? Or is the void directing your attention toward the thing that it's ultimately going to deliver an insight about? Like, consciousness is so weird, you know, like we really don't know anything about consciousness pretty much on any level of analysis. And, you know, but I think value, which that Leela is about value. And, you know, we talk about value a lot in the Bitcoin space, primarily in an economic way. But I think it really all comes back to that. Like Peterson often talks about the fact that, you know, his critique of this strict materialist is that you can't engage with the quote unquote physical or material world absent an a priori value framework that allows you to ascribe value, which then directs behavior and action within that material world. And so where does that value framework come from? How is it cultivated, you know, and how do we engage it, and how can we control how we engage it, and what aspects of it are, you know, are eternal in such a way? And, you know, I think if you pursue that line of thinking far enough, you end up in the deeply philosophical or theological domains, because I think those are the ones that have spent the most time attempting to understand and deal with the concept of value itself, you know, and the concept of why, you know, the ought, basically, and why certain actions are taken and what those actions represent. And, you know, I've been talking and writing a lot about, well, writing a little bit, talking a lot lately about, because Bitcoiners seem that this engagement with value that Bitcoiners are taking, and again, first it happens in the economic and financial, but then, you know, this thing starts to reorient your life and you care less about like all the frivolous bullshit and things like, you know, relationships and health and freedom and all the, and truth become elevated as like the things that most orient you. And then you engage with people on that basis and you develop a, you know, a culture or a community, and your, you know, your life starts to change around these things that have historically been elevated as like the most valuable transcendent principles or ideas, you know, for all the history of humanity. And the question is, like, why is that happening? And and one of the outcomes seems to be that a lot of Bitcoiners are turning to previously developed like traditional religions, right? Like a lot of, of Bitcoiners are going to Christianity. And obviously it's not my place to critique what anybody does in that domain, but I think that's a response to a greater engagement and a greater curiosity perhaps around value itself and what is most valuable and how best to orient yourself around the thing that is most valuable. And, but I think we exist, like culture is always developing, language is always developing, our ideas are always developing. And I think it may be the case that by virtue of the fact that we have a more global consciousness today, we are familiar with all the traditions that have come in the past. And I think they all, more or less, have been trying to answer this question. What is the value that it's most rational to subordinate yourself to effectively, to be the value that most orients you? Call it God, call it the spirit of the universe, call it the, you know, whatever. And I think it's a bit, my perspective is, as much as like, I can see the appeal of, because I see a great insight, or I see great wisdom in a lot of prior religious traditions. And we can all just pretty much mutually agree that the institutions have become horribly corrupted, and you know, they might be irredeemable at this point, but the wisdom and the writings themselves, there's a lot of value to be derived from them. But if what we're seeking is the most truthful engagement or conceptualization of what is most valuable, I don't know if selecting one among many, all of which are basically using different language and emerging in different cultures, but to say something or explore something very similar, I don't know if it's the most truthful or rational approach to just pick one because it's expedient or comfortable and adopt that as your framework. I think it might be the case that by virtue of the fact that we have all that experience and knowledge from the past, and we also have this new form of value in Bitcoin that's radically upgrading and enabling us to pursue value in a clearer way, perhaps than ever before, I think there might be some way of establishing a value framework that's entirely novel that we should be pursuing in our work and in our writing and our conversations, and therefore not necessarily simply adopting something from the past too soon.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so to sort of sum that up is that we've got all of this ancient wisdom that is basically different flavors of the same sort of seed of truth. And maybe we can weave those together, weave elements of those together, and perhaps form a more cohesive version of it moving forward. Like, would that be?
Something like that. And that's by no means like a novel assertion. I mean, there's been lots of people throughout the ages that have basically said, you know, Joseph Campbell or Aldous Huxley Manly P. Hall, like all these people recognize like, hey, you know, in different places and times and different cultures and different languages, people were trying to answer this same question. And by virtue of the differences in their geography and ethnicity and culture and language, the form that those narratives or those historical accounts, dependent upon your perspective, the form that they took was different, obviously, because, you know, that's what happens when people are in different places and communicate differently, and there's different symbols and ideas that characterize the language and the culture, et cetera. But, you know, they've all said that it seems rational that for our time, for the here and now, there would be like a coalescence of some kind that takes the most truthful aspects of all those things and mixes it with the most truthful aspects that we can discern in the here and now, and spits out or transmutes something that is more relevant for sure, possibly more true in terms of what kind of concepts it enables the listener or the reader or the individual to actually grasp and integrate than anything that's come before. And it seems to me to be the case, and kind of the crux of the piece that I wrote, is that Bitcoin is probably going to play an instrumental role in that, fucking bananas as it seems that a invisible protocol on the internet is going to constitute like a spiritual or religious awakening of some kind. Like, I get how retarded that is, but the evidence is kind of starting to stack up. And so what I think is really cool about this, though, is like in my writing, I'm not trying to put forward a new religion, right? Like, even though I suspect I'll write a lot in the future about topics of this sort of depth, like spirituality and theology and that kind of stuff. But I don't think we want to go back in the direction where there are sacred scriptures and things are held up as like, you know, the paramount truth that are external to us. I think, you know, if we can, truth doesn't need defenders, right? And I think almost like a hallmark of truth is that it compels transformation. And now, like, there's an element of like, yes, but truth needs to be conceptualized. And so I think writing can help that, but we have to not fall into the trap that so many throughout history seem to have fallen into. From my perspective, is that they take, you know, what's been written down as the truth rather than as a means of coming to your own understanding of the truth. And so I think what all these conversations are good for is that, but it seems to me that like, Bitcoin and what it represents and what it fosters in terms of the individuals and interpersonally between people is actually the highest manifestation of those principles that have been talked about and explored and held up as the highest values or principles throughout the ages. And so now, instead of having like a scripture to follow or even like a central culture hero to emulate, as has been the purpose of religious narrative, again, depending on your perspective on the historicity of certain characters. But now it's actually a mechanism for people to access, you know, what is of greatest value and almost be inspired by the success of that mechanism to transmute those very principles and values into themselves and act them out into the world. So it's not, you know, it's something like an emulating a central culture hero, but it's a far more tangible method of doing so. And I think it's also one that perhaps needn't be as cognitively like intentionally directed. It seems like there might be a more
behavior seems to orient towards it because of incentives, maybe, or
you could say that.
Yeah. Don't let me put words in your mouth, but I was kind of like wondering if that's kind of the direction you're, if that's where you're leaning.
100%. Yeah. Like, I think it's obviously more complex than that, but mm-hmm. you know, the principles that are inherent in the thing are rubbing off on eliciting, inspiring those same principles in the people that are engaging it. Mm-hmm. And so you get like the double whammy of it actually being a mechanism that operates exclusively on, like, within the parameters of those principles and values, like freedom and like truth and love, et cetera. But it also, by virtue of how successful a thing it is, because it operates that way, I think it indicates to people that are even halfway observant that those principles are extremely valuable. And, you know, like, what are Bitcoiners doing, like, when they're so adamant about honesty and integrity and truth and freedom? Like, I mean, they're somewhat, I mean, not to say that these weren't available or latent within people before. Of course, they would have to have been for them mm-hmm. to be expressed now. But I think Bitcoin is almost bolstering those things and amplifying them and drawing them out of people in a way that previously they weren't sufficiently inspired to do so, at least at the same level. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's, and so for that reason, just to put a pin on that, I think that in conjunction with all of us asking these questions and having these conversations and trying to tease out these ideas in our writing just helps us gain more clarity around what might be going on here and how we might pursue and orient ourselves around the greatest form of value that we can conceptualize. So that value framework is optimized for our aim, but not ever saying, this is how it is, this is how you should be, this is, not ever being prescriptive like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dude, I love this thread. I love this idea. And this is, it's funny, I've had a couple spaces that I've been on where it's sort of been a group of, you know, very Christian focused Bitcoiners saying that, you know, usually it's something along the lines of, you know, Bitcoin is like Jesus, or, you know, Bitcoin is the most important thing in the world, second to Jesus or second to, you know, Christianity or Christ or whatever. Sorry, they don't say Jesus, they say Christ. And, you know, and my argument has been very similar to that thread, which is this idea that, you know, the idea of Christ and the concepts that emerge from the body, mind, or the spirit, or the person that was Christ, emerged at a time in history where that meta or those principles had to be more very prescriptive, versus, you know, what Bitcoin kind of represents to me, at least, is that it's less prescriptive. It's more just implied, and you just have to orient yourself in that way in order to win, or in order to get ahead, or in order to progress through life in the most, I don't know, adaptive, good, functional way, whatever word you want to give that. And for me, that is, it's simultaneously more subtle and more profound, you know, and more powerful. And as you said, it's kind of like a way of weaving all of those principles from multiple schools of religion or schools of thought or schools of philosophy. And instead of, I think that word is perfect, instead of making it prescriptive, it kind of it incentivizes us to embody a certain type of behavior, as opposed to try and, like, again, as you said, like, take the text as truth and it's literal fucking truth and this is what I must do. And people, like, you know, I mean, some religions go so far as to, like, genuinely believe that when the paradise comes, people are going to crawl out of their fucking graves and, you know, we're going to all live again, which to me is kind of, you know, off the fucking deep end. It's kind of, it's confused the metaphor for, you know, a literal truth. Which I don't think is fucking helpful. And that's what gives, you know, all of these religions a bit of a bad stigma. And I think that's what people like Knut are salty about, because, you know, he's like, well, that's not going to fucking happen. And it's like, okay, I get it, but it's the metaphor. And he's like, no, but it's all stupid. I'm like, no, it's not.
Yeah. There's a line here. You know, we're more, you know, we're probably both on the more of the Petersonian side, where, you know, like a metaphor can be more real than real, because it's real across different scales and different dimensions. But yeah, no, like I agree with that. And I very much appreciate, you know, discourse with the people that have are in that camp that you just described, because they've, you know, it's very fruitful to have those conversations with them around value and why they have oriented their value structure, value hierarchy around this type of value. And it, you know, it could just be the case that Bitcoin makes, because the whole notion of these religious stories is that certain principles, like the word made flesh, is that certain highest principles, the things that are most true, the things that if you could orient or subordinate your life to them, result in optimized outcomes for the best possible aim. That's kind of the pitch. They've been transmuted into a form, into flesh, into a character that is emblematic of what it looks like to be properly oriented or subordinated to the highest values and principles that we can conceive of. And this is what religious narrative is attempting to explicate, as far as I can ascertain. And it may just be the case that, like, and what the implication is that doing that is the way that you access the greatest value that's available to you, right? And this is why sacrifice and subordination and prostration, all these things are common in religious story, because when you end up taking a value like truth or a value like freedom or a value like love, and actually end up saying, like, I'm going to commit my limited resources to being of service to them, to subordinating myself to them, to recognizing that they are higher than my physical temporary self. And by doing so, invite them into my life such that both my life and the life of the people I share an environment with are maximally optimized towards the highest good. I mean, I think that's the pitch. And it may just be the case that something like Bitcoin, that is very similar in the fact that it's the transmutation of certain high values and principles into form, is just that it's more explicit now. The value that it represents is more explicit, you know, because you may have to take on faith in the past, like in religion, we're like, okay, I get it. Truth, love, freedom, peace, like these are the highest values and principles. And these stories are a way for me to understand that better and for me to try to integrate that understanding into my life. But, you know, you live in cross cultures, different people, different times, like there's a lot of noise in that. But if now you have kind of the same thing happening, but it's way more, I mean, there's a price signal attached to it. Maybe that's the thing. You say, hey, the price signal is saying that that very same mechanism is just happening in a domain of interpersonal value exchange and pricing, that I can more clearly see the value of those values, the value of those principles, and orienting myself around them. And heck, look, I mean, seems to be doing pretty well, because, you know, the market cap is 500 billion or a trillion or whatever, and it's growing this quickly. And is that not a signal of how much and how quickly people are coming to appreciate the values that are inherent in this system? And I think the answer is probably yes. And I think the answer that, or the reason why it perhaps appeals to people that are quote unquote non-religious, is because it doesn't come with all the institutionalized corruption, all this kind of jazz. But the reason why it's having the same effect, or even a stronger effect, that religion has historically had on people, is because the very same process is playing out.
Taking place, yeah.
It's just playing out in a different way than has ever been the case. And people don't realize it's a religious process. You know, we can put it that way. And you know, the irony of... Well, you know, you mentioned people that are like hardcore atheists and they dismiss a lot of this, and that's certainly the case. And I try to pay lip service to that at the beginning of the piece. But the other part is that even the religious people, quote unquote, in the world today, and I'm painting with extremely broad brushstrokes here, but by and large, I think they undermine and do themselves, and more importantly, the truth of the thing that they're ostensibly trying to orient themselves around, a disservice, by taking things overly literally and almost being a reflection of our hyper-materialized perspective on the world today, instead of trying to seek greater, deeper insight, wisdom, and understanding from those systems of value that they're engaging with. And, you know, I don't know who to attribute this quote to, but it's something to the effect that you can only understand a thing to the extent that you understand yourself. Like the maximum wisdom you're going to see in something, of course, is limited by the wisdom that you're capable of, you know, conceptualizing or holding in your mind or seeing. And so I think, I think the world's a fucked up place and everything's, you know, upside down. But I think everyone on both sides is kind of missing it. And maybe it's the case that Bitcoin is emerging as a more explicit unifier of the very same principles that have been recapitulated a million times before.
there's something, I love that. There's something you mentioned earlier as well about, what was it? It was kind of like this modern reincarnation almost of these, you know, classical values. It reminded me of this idea of precision or accuracy or fidelity. I think you use that word quite a bit inside the article, and it's a word that I love to use a lot, is that truth, and this is argued very strongly in Leela by Persig, is, you know, he says that truth is kind of almost a matter of fidelity. The clearer something becomes, and this is also related to, you know, map and territory, right? The better it fits, the greater the fidelity, the greater the precision of the way or the philosophy or the idea, the closer it is to that which is true. And to a large degree, you know, evolution could be in some way described as the process of increasing the fidelity. And, you know, now we're at a point in time where, yeah, we've had this discovery / invention that may orient action and value judgments in such a way that they are of higher fidelity, greater precision, greater accuracy, and therefore higher truth. And that linkage to me seems to be quite strong. And if that's the case, that really ties back into your whole discussion about why, why the title of your piece is such, you know, Money Messiah, is that this thing is that which brings us back in alignment with the greater truth. And yeah. I think that thread is just so beautiful.
100%. I mean, and I think that so often truth and love and God are used synonymously.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what does it mean that you've established, or you are establishing, a greater, higher fidelity relationship with truth? Well, truth is what is, right? And what is God? God is what is, or you might call it the force that generates what is, but like they're very closely related. So if you're making the case that you've now, something has been established that allows you to engage with what is in a high fidelity relationship, then it's almost obvious that it would cause what has been called, and maybe this is horrible language, and maybe we need to develop new language around it, but like religious experiences or religious transformations, because you're being transformed or upgraded by a closer relationship to the order that, or like the force that orders our experience of reality, something like that. Of course, as you said about map and territory, like if whatever our aim is, and there's an interesting discussion to be had about like what the highest aim should be, but no matter what the aim is, like the greater clarity with which we can see the environment that we have to move through to get to our aim, then the faster or the more easily we're going to get to the aim. And so if we're engaging consciousness, you know, because who the fuck knows what reality is, but like our humans experience of consciousness and reality, like our experience of life, if we're presuming or we're asserting that we've found a mechanism for seeing that territory more clearly, or for mapping onto it more clearly, then it stands to reason that we're going to achieve our aims and determine what better aims should be. So those two things taken together, we're going to do it more effectively than ever before. And what could be better than that? Determining what the best aims to strive mm-hmm. for are, and having the capacity to move toward them better than ever before. I mean, that's like, that's it. That's what you're supposed to do as a human being, you know?
Yeah. Welcome to life. Have you read Leela or no?
Yeah.
You have. Okay. Because I'm only halfway through at the moment, and you know what, one of the takeaways at the moment is this idea that value or quality is the thing that that actually, I'm gonna butcher the shit out of this now, but that we don't ascribe value to a substance, but the fact that, you know, value exists allows us to kind of measure, you know, substance and all that sort of shit. It's kind of like it's the in-between piece, right? It's the linkage between the objective and the subjective, etc. How does that idea, and I've completely butchered the fuck out of it, so I hope you know what I'm kind of referring to, because I like poorly explained it, but how does that relate then back to this the broader idea of what we've been discussing so far in terms of higher value, etc.?
My interpretation was, you know, because the one of the fundamental frameworks for understanding value and the dynamics in that book are static and dynamic quality, mm-hmm. right? Which is just more like previously established patterns of value and more novel or yet to be established patterns of value and the interplay between them. Order and chaos as well. I mean, it's a very similar theme to Peterson's work. But my takeaway from that, and it's one that I've been chewing on for a while, but is that, you know, the fundamental substrate is somehow value. Now, you know, you can also call that God, you can also call that love. And to understand that is to unite with God in the metaphorical or theological or philosophical sense. So it's you're basically in the realm of ineffability there. And I mean, this is actually what the thing I'm currently working on is about, is a deeper analysis of value and why, how can we come to a logical and rational appreciation for how it might be the fundamental substrate and not matter and not whatever else, you know, has been suggested before, but how, and you know, the people listening will just, there's not enough dots here to connect. So I know it doesn't make any sense to just make the assertion that the fundamental component of the reality that we experience is somehow value. And that's the thing that we reveal instead of create, and we engage in, and that it guides and directs things, you know, in a certain way. So, you know, TBD on the article that hopefully will do a better job than that on explaining it. But, you know, that was my takeaway from the book.
Yeah. Okay. Much better articulated than what I fucking bumbled through. Speaking of books, actually, you mentioned consciousness before, and I think you mentioned Eric Neumann in the article, right? Mm-hmm. Was it you who also mentioned his book, the one something about like the mother or whatever? I feel like you mentioned that to me.
I may have, but this is the one that I referred to in the chat: the origins and history of consciousness.
Have you read that yet? Or
oh yeah.
Okay,
it's great.
I've gone and downloaded that and a whole series of consciousness books, and that's like a big next topic that I want to go and tackle. We haven't even started on your fucking article yet, so we will get to that. But I was wondering if there's particular threads. It is all related, I guess. Yeah. So is there any particular threads you would pull from that book that are related to what we've been discussing so far?
I think the biggest one would be a potential framework for understanding religious narrative is the easiest way to sum it up, because he analyzes it in a very in-depth way from the perspective of psychological processes and how different components of the narrative, you know, the virgin birth and the underworld and, you know, the incestuous relationship with the mother and all this kind of stuff are reflections, either conscious or subconscious, of processes that characterize the development and the evolution of human consciousness, both in two ways. The evolution of human consciousness, as in from the time that you're a child to the time that you're a quote unquote adult, as well as broader evolution in terms of like religious narrative. You know, you could say that it started with cave paintings 40,000 years ago, right? And they're very rudimentary and basic. And we have to appreciate that, like, this is the process of human beings reflecting back to themselves what they are and how they act and what meaning is and why things are meaningful and why actions are taken. And so it's not just like they're not just asserting something that is a known belief, let's say. There's this interplay between the ideas represented on the wall of the cave or in the book or whatever as narrative frameworks for understanding processes that they simply don't have the language of quote unquote science to understand. And even if they did, which is more powerful, that you could, that I could describe to you in a Jungian sort of sense, like the evolution of the self and the ego and all this kind of stuff, or would it be more impactful? Would it be more quote unquote real if it was represented in an extremely salient narrative so that you could see not just the processes, but the outcomes of the processes and that behavior in a broader context? Interesting question, but I think history has shown that the latter is probably more salient or more impactful, which is why they've probably continued. And so the broader argument about evolution of consciousness is, we evolve in tandem with our ways of conceptualizing and articulating these stories and the characters that animate them and the values and the principles that are imbued in them. And so, very much so influence the assertion that I make at the end of the piece, because as our language and as our culture and as our technology improves and our methods of representing ourselves, I mean, because that's what culture and technology basically is. We're turning ourselves inside out. We're manifesting our minds. You know, culture is very psychedelic in that way, because psychedelic means mind manifesting. But this is what we're doing. And so it stands to reason that as culture and technology evolves over time, it's doing so in tandem with an evolution of the internal processes of our consciousness it's doing so in tandem with those processes. And if we're in a scenario now where, you know, we've gone from cave paintings to try to get a grip on understanding ourselves, to literally being able to use words, i.e. computer code, to create infinite worlds, right? Infinite digital worlds that we come in and out of from the quote unquote physical. And, you know, culture itself is that same thing. You know, it's the externalization of these worlds that we've created, but now we've really gone and done it and taken ourselves into digital worlds that are basically infinite. And so that is a dramatic enhancement of our ability to engage in that process of back and forth feedback reflection on who and what we are and how to understand ourselves. And it's not so evident that that's its purpose, right? Because, you know, it's very distracting at the same time. And this book, and obviously the book was written before we had digital worlds, so that's my little extension onto it. But this book helps you understand, or at least understand the argument that he and Jung and others have put forward, that these narratives that have characterized all of human history are that attempt to both understand ourselves and feed back into the process of the evolution of consciousness. And it's not just that the narratives are used in that way. The narratives are also both used for and a representation of what the purpose of consciousness is itself. And it would seem to be the case that the reason why we see the emergence of love and truth and liberation that always gets conjured up, is always the ends of these sorts of stories, is because those are the ends toward which we should be aiming our consciousness and using them to orient ourselves in the world to gain greater clarity on those very principles and values and to organize our life around them as much as possible as we move into ever-changing environments.
I love it. I had a little brain fart there, but then I just fucking forgot it. The
epiphany doesn't last long, does it?
It doesn't. Yeah, it came and it went back to the void. Anyway, I'm sure it'll come back later.
It's a great book, and I highly recommend it, because even if their assertion is wrong, even if there's a better explanation for a religious narrative, and I'm on the side of, at this point, you know, I'm not saying I agree with everything they put forward, but I think it's a pretty darn rational approach to understanding this mechanism, this activity that humans all throughout the world inevitably engage in. I think it's pretty darn good for understanding that and then informing how we might, you know, continue that process more consciously.
I just remember what I thought of. The quote unquote scientific method or science itself actually is, you know, what a lot of people don't realize is narrative oriented as well. Like, particularly when you get into the more sticky, like micro and macro sciences, like, you know, you don't really need too much of a narrative to, you know, to work out the velocity of a car and, you know, the friction on the road, et cetera, right? Like the Newtonian level physics. But science, when it gets kind of deeper at the, whether it's the quantum level or the universal, call it Einsteinian or macro level, they're all basically narratives. They're all attempts to use, you know, some sort of narrative to describe behavior in some way. And then it's kind of like the backwards process of rationalizing the narrative anyway. So all of these things fit into, to use the Jordan Peterson thing again, is like the matter versus what matters, which is, you know, what I tried to take a stab at in part two of when I was doing my Peterson series was, you know, that we've fallen into this trap, particularly in the last 500 years, where the study of matter has been so fruitful or so profitable, call it. Like, the pendulum has swung so far in that direction that we've tried to take that empirical approach and apply it to everything. You know, everything's a fucking equation. You know, nothing matters. You know, everything can be reduced down to a set of numbers and equations. And, you know, if only we know the variables, then we can break it down and we know what is right for everybody and everything. And, you know, we understand the whole world. There is no more narrative. There is no more, free will and consciousness. It's all a program. And that, to me, I think is, number one, I think it's false. But number two, it's kind of like it's cold, barren, and fucking dry. Like, it doesn't, I don't know, it just doesn't sit right with me. And I think that thread there is one of the things where, looking back on it now, what probably hooked me onto Peterson's work and other similar work to make me go back down that rabbit hole, because in my early 20s I was a mega atheist. Like, I was, you know, more than canoodling, and I think you've gone through that. I think we've all had sort of that journey where we got so disillusioned with the institutionalization of what religion has become that we kind of threw the baby out with the bathwater and we're like, nothing actually matters. And we probably got quite close to nihilism. And maybe some of us, you know, were in a nihilistic place. And it was that hook for me has been the movement back to what matters. And that's such a profound direction. And once again, it is actually seems to be, I mean, even what matters is really just another way of saying value, which, tying back to what you said earlier, seems to be the substrate of everything, right? It's, so anyway, I'm rambling on there, but that's,
well, no, it's, I it's all great. And I think it's good. And like the question, this is why we've said it a couple of times already in this conversation, like the paramount question is what matters? What is the thing of greatest value and how should we strive toward it? And as much as I'm sure I would be critical of the current quote unquote scientific paradigm that prevails today as you, the fact is that even a lot of those people are acting in a religious manner. And this would be Peterson's assertion, even if they don't know it, because you could say like, how do you direct what you're trying to do with matter without an a priori value framework? And the answer, as far as I can tell, is that you can't. And so you might say like, yeah, I'm trying to, you know, engage in science and matter to improve, you know, some peace or improve freedom and free humanity. It's like, yeah, that's a great thing. I hope you're doing it well. Yeah, exactly. Why is that? And they say, oh, like, I don't know. I just decided it feels good or whatever I want to. And, you know, there's two points that came to mind when you were speaking. One is, I think, you know, it's so bizarre to me that the intellectual point of view today that's like applauded as being the intellectual point of view is there's no guy in the sky, bro. Don't be an idiot. And like, and that's the extent of your dismissal of the enterprise of determining the highest value that human beings have engaged in for 50,000, probably more years. That's it. That you heard that in a book, it said that this is the way it went and that didn't line up for you and case closed. That's fucking retarded, but it's emblematic of just how hubristic and arrogant that we are today in the world today. And that hubris and arrogance obviously permeates into the scientific, the material realm, which is why we get the assumption that what a lot of the, you know, people are doing in that realm should be imposed on other people because it is de facto good. And with no real means of justifying why it's good other than it's science, you know, and obviously the last 2 years have been, you know, that's been in our faces all over the place. But also I don't accept even the notion that theological pursuits or religious narrative is irrational. I mean, scientific maybe, but like what is science other than just looking at everything and trying to, you know, you're trying to take the material that's available to you and you're making hypotheses and you're trying to discern what is and how you might manipulate what is to certain ends. And again, necessarily there's a value framework in there somewhere, but with religion, I feel like it's the same enterprise, just in a different, the substrate is different. In science, we have matter, right? We can, and it's easier to, it's so much more explicit. It's like, okay, you know, the ball moved through space at that speed and you know, the cell did this, but in the realm of value, it's all quote, like invisible, or at least it only shows up couched within our behaviors and our actions. And so it's, you know, it's far more difficult to nail down, let's say. But what I see religious narrative as being is like the ongoing process, as we were saying before, of trying to determine, okay, if trying to determine like what values are available to us and how they've come to be part of our language lexicon and why they have such a weight or a resonance. And then we try to say, okay, like when someone lives a life that's properly oriented around these values versus these values, what is the outcome? And religious narrative tends to say, live them around these values, bad outcome. Live them around these values, good outcome. And so that seems pretty rational and logical to me. But to take it even a step further, and I think this is what science would do as well, would say, okay, and that's not very controversial, right? People say, if you live your life around truth and peace and honesty versus being corrupt and dishonest, things are going to work out in the former better than the latter in the long run, right? Okay, why? Why do we exist in a reality where those things elicit the better outcome than these things? And again, I don't think it's really a dramatic assertion to say, there must be something regarding both ourselves and our consciousness and the environment and reality in which it's engaging with that values those more, that those values or principles, what we've what we've come to call values and principles of love, truth, peace, freedom, etc., they are somehow, even though the words don't do them justice, they are somehow more constituent of the reality that we're engaging with. They're more fundamental parameters of the reality that we're engaging with than those things that are not effective or operable. I mean, it's the same map and territory argument.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
if these things are the map, what territory are they mapping?
They're mapping
a territory that coheres with them very closely, a high fidelity relationship.
Yeah.
If the map of dishonesty and greed and corruption
is not cohering
with the territory, well, I mean, I think that says that that's not what the territory is about. The territory is about, if the map coheres with the territory, you get information about both map and territory. And I think that's, you know, the quote unquote scientific approach that, albeit using different substrate, different materials, and therefore different language and languages and methods. But I that's why I make the assertion that the religious pursuits or the theological pursuits have not been as irrational or illogical as our modern era has made them out to be.
Totally, totally. It there was, while you were talking, I was just remembering, do you know, have you spoken to Trav? Like on one of your pods or something. Do you know who I'm talking about? Like Parabolic Trav, Meta Trav. Yeah. So he and I were doing like a little series around his meta concept, which is fucking great. And one of the things, the things that popped out of the void was this idea that religion is kind of like bro science, which is, you know, what is bro science in simple terms? It's like, you go and you figure out what works at the gym or, you know, with how you eat. And, you know, bro science generally says, you know, lift heavy weights, eat meat, you know, eat as naturally as possible, get some sun. And, you know, you didn't need like fucking microscopes and measurements and all that sort of stuff to figure it out. And like religion kind of emerged in the same way with these observations of, you know, what Trav likes to call meta, which is, you know, another word for like the way. Like religion is an observation of methods or metas of living and behaving, you know, basically orientations of behavior that lead to a better outcome, for example. And they weren't measured, you know, using like precise scientific measurements.
How much better do you feel today?
And like, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they're bro science. And I just love that, yeah, as you said, it's, you know, it's not that religion is non-scientific, but it's just a different scientific approach to a large degree, because you're dealing with, as you said, you're not dealing with you know, a table or a fucking ball. You're dealing with stuff that is, you know, far more ephemeral than.
And how would someone in a prior era, like if they'd had these insights and kind of seeing this in the way that we've been trying to articulate, what would be the best way for them to communicate that? And like not just communicate it as though it's just something they want to communicate. Like, how do you communicate something that could be profoundly true?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if they tried to like do the whole categorization, you know, strictly objective material language, you know, sciencey sort of language to the extent that it was available back then. I mean, I don't think it's, well, like we said about religious narrative before, it's meta true. It's true, like in a deeper way even. So it's not necessarily even that they're like using narrative to get a better message across. Like the narrative is conveying something far more true than the specific quote unquote scientific articulation could ever do, you know? And, so yeah, I agree with that assessment, and I think, you know, and it's the meme of you know, the blue haired SJW person that's like, well, where's your small double blind placebo controlled trial? To say nothing of like, you know, they're turning a blind eye to the last 2 years, but you know, this is where an over reliance on science has gotten us. It's like, I'll believe nothing. Like, I won't trust myself to like put it through my own filter and constantly refine my own filter to discover truth and then integrate what I find to the better of myself. I want somebody else to tell me that it's quote unquote true based on a method that they devised and, you know, and of course those people are always like in horrible shape and they're, you know, just not very healthy or integrated looking, let's say, with the truth.
That but my doctor said, all right, that, yeah. but the food pyramid says I should have 7 servings per day of bread and pasta.
Exactly. Yeah. And I just think, you know, back to the book for a second, one of the main distinctions they make there is like, you could broadly characterize the material realm as like effective for categorizing, right? Mm-hmm. I want to know numbers to use to count the bricks and measure this or that. But quality is a far more actionable information, and it might be the only actionable information. So the quote I remember from that book is like something about, like someone asked like, what kind of dog is that? And they were looking for like the breed, I guess. And the response of, you know, whatever wise person they were speaking to said, oh, that's a good dog. That's a very, mm-hmm. like, that's a good dog, mm-hmm. or a high quality dog. And in reality, which information is more relevant to action ultimately? And I think, you know, if you know that's a good dog or a bad dog, then you're going to engage in it differently versus it's a fucking terrier or it's a this. Like that, those words only even matter if they connect with a value. Oh, it's a pit bull. Oh, like fear, danger, mm-hmm, like all this mm-hmm. kind of stuff. That's why the categorization is relevant. But the categorization by itself is like moot. It's inert. And again, we seem to be way overweighted in the former way of looking at things and engaging the world in today's culture at dismissing the latter at our great detriment. I mean, this is where we insert Nietzsche's famous phrase of the death of God. I mean, this is what happens. And, you know, God is such a loaded word and it triggers so many people. But when that domain of human pursuit and the ways in which it influences and orients our behavior, when that is not properly accounted for, you get really bad outcomes because you're flying blind in the territory, right? Mm-hmm. So that is the thing, call it whatever you want. I'm sure it'll take on different languages as we move through time, but like that area of pursuit is essential. We're not transcending that. We're not getting away from that. In modern culture, in a hyper Bitcoinized world, that shit is coming back big time. And I think this is part of why we're having this discussion and why I wrote the piece. And we don't know what form it's going to take. And we don't, you know, all that stuff. But in Bitcoin, when you have that Bitcoin lens, you know, when it starts to transform you, everything needs to be recapitulated. You know, a lot of people report this, right? Like, oh my God, like I'm seeing things so differently now. I need to reassess my diet and reassess the cultural institutions and reassess politics and reassess money and reassess what the relevance of the religious pursuits throughout time were and what needs to be recapitulated and brought back into our world so that we can flourish optimally and not fucking destroy ourselves.